This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Okay, so the Hunger Hotspots Report acts as an early warning tool, effectively flagging emerging areas where acute hunger is on the rise and is expected to get worse.
That's World Food Program spokesperson James Belgrave on how his organization identifies countries already facing or projected to face starvation. Details coming up. Also, we have an update on Senegal's violent protests. And Ugandan soldiers are found after escaping an attack in Somalia. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Citizens of Guinea-Bissau voted yesterday in a highly anticipated election to fill the country's national legislature more than a year after President Umaro Sissoko Embalo dissolved the parliament. VOA's Portuguese to Africa managing editor Alvaro Andrade is in the capital Bissau to brief us on the latest.
Yes, election day in Guinea-Bissau yesterday went smoothly and without major incidents. National and international observers gave a positive note to the electoral process, which, according to them, was free and transparent. Yesterday, I spoke to some voters who said that their names were not on the lists, but the National Election Commission said later that the main problems were resolved, but some voters did not correct errors after voter registration 1 month ago. This was the problem of some of this situation. In the polling station we visit, everything was peaceful. Political leaders said everything went well. And I spoke with the head of the ECOWAS mission, the former president of Cabo Verde, Jorge Fonseca. And he said that the process was free and calm. However, all observers or international observers will present their reports tomorrow at a joint press conference. African Union and the Francophonie organization and the Portuguese country-speaking organization and ECOWAS. The National Election Commission will announce the results on Wednesday, maybe in the morning. The two main parties, the coalition Pai Terra Lanka, which won the election in 2019, and MADEM, the second major party, are hoping for victory. And the president, Umaro Sissoko Embalo, said yesterday in Gabu that everyone must respect the result and that he will not allow disorder. And he said that there will be no Sonko here, referring to the situation in Senegal. So far, no political party has released any results. It seems everyone is waiting for the official results on Wednesday.
So nearly 1 million voters were registered to elect, more than 100 lawmakers from six parties. Could you break that down for us to explain it a little bit more?
Yes, it's almost 900,000 voters. 37,000 in Europe and other African countries, and they already chose 102 deputies for the parliament, and the political party most voted will lead the government. The president should choose the leader this election. We don't know if it's going to be the PAIGC, lead the coalition PAI Terra Lanka, or MADEM. The second major party is a party near to the president.
Alvaro, citizens hope this vote will help set the country on the right path. But since assuming office, the president Embalo has kind of cracked down on civic freedoms and he has consolidated his grip on power.
Yes, it's true. And the political observers in the Bissau, the Guinea-Bissau, said the president wants a country with the presidentialism. Now it's the government who rules the country. The president is like a referee, but since Umaro Sissoko Embalo got the power, he is the head of government. There is a head of government, but in the daily basis, he runs the country because he... yesterday, he told he will inaugurate an airport in Gabu. He will prepare a roads in the Guinea-Bissau, and he leads the government meeting, not the prime minister. Usually, in the system like Guinea-Bissau, like Cabo Verde, like Portugal on Europe, like the parliament, the power is in the parliament and in the government, but now is to the president. And yesterday, the president said, here in Guinea-Bissau, I'm Kim Il-sung, like Kim Il-sung would means, I am the man of the power in Guinea-Bissau. This is a concern for the political parties and from some observers. But let's see what's going to happen the next month, because after the election, I think in 1 and 2 weeks, the president will invite the winner to present the new government.
VOA's Portuguese to Africa managing editor Alvaro Andrade, closely following the legislative elections in Guinea-Bissau, he spoke to me from the capital, Bissau. Senegal has been rocked by 3 days of violence, protests in which 16 people have died, one of its deadliest bouts of civil unrest in decades. The protests began last week after a court convicted opposition leader Ousmane Sonko of corrupting youth after it acquitted him of raping a worker at a massage salon. The court issued a 2-year prison sentence, which could keep Sonko from running in the 2024 election. Reporter Alpha Jallo in Dakar tells VOA's Douglas Mpuga that there were no protests on Monday, Dakar, and the city was generally calm.
It's calm generally because there hasn't been any report of any manifestation or demonstrations in Dakar and some of the outskirts like Kermasar, Tengich, and where the situation was very violent over the past 2 days. But Dakar today is relatively calm, vehicles are flying. But then I noticed that the express train is not moving today. It's being suspended. The most interesting thing is that the situation has been gradually, according to the police, they said that they are trying to control the situation. And I can just add that yesterday the police, they had press conference in the evening, tried to inform the general public what transpired between these last 3 days when there was very serious rioting. And the police commissioner said that about 16 people lost their lives, but then there were also infiltrators among the demonstrators, among the protesters, because some people were caught with firearms, which even the police hasn't got. So this is what the police commissioner said last night in a press briefing.
We understand that the government has got access to some mobile internet services in certain areas. Is that correct?
That's correct. It is affecting everybody, including myself, WhatsApp, Twitter, Instagram. In fact, somebody, an expert on internet, was said in one radio station that this is one of the biggest mistakes that the government is doing, because this is not affecting only the general public, but it is affecting those who are working at home and some of these people who are using the internet for their business transactions, like money transfer outlets. That's why today I have gone out and seen that most of these money transfer outlets and some of the banks at the outskirts of Dakar, they all remain closed because they have no network to do their work.
Is this only in Dakar or is it across the country?
This is across the country. This is general. It's affecting everybody. Because last night, somebody was trying to reach me by WhatsApp. He said that he was able to do that because he have to upload an app called, VPN. And even some people who have been using VPN and other, fast internet apps, they have noticed that even the speed has been, affected right now. Most people have no access to internet. That is very true.
Now that Ousmane Sonko was sentenced to 2 years in jail, and still President Macky Sall has refused to rule out running for a third term, do you think the protests will stop, or maybe they'll continue?
I can only tell you that members of Mr. Ousmane Sonko, Patriots Party, the PASTEF, even last night they issued a press release saying that they are calling all their members and all their sympathizers and the Senegalese public in general to come out in large numbers to continue this protest, this demonstration, until President Macky Sall quit office. This is what they said. But as things look like at the moment, I think that would be very difficult, because just as I said, the army has been deployed in most strategic positions. they are taking position everywhere. You see the military, the army, the police. And I mean, so many things have been vandalized in this country. So many businesses, people lost everything. So many supermarkets have been completely burned down, vandalized. So this is the reason why the army have taken position. So I doubt whether their call will be heeded by people. And the other interesting thing is, which I forgot to tell you, that during the press briefing yesterday, the commissioner of police, the director of public protection, mentioned that they have so far arrested about 500 people. Some of them you have minors, but majority of them people who have even were caught with, you know, very dangerous firearms.
That's reporter Alpha Jallo. He spoke with VOA's Douglas Mpuga from Dakar. Sudan, Burkina Faso, Mali, Nigeria, Somalia, and South Sudan already face or are projected to face starvation or risk a slide towards catastrophic conditions, according to the World Food Programme. In a conversation with James Belgrave, a WFP spokesperson, I first asked about the process the organization uses, like WFP, in identifying nations about to plunge into a famine-related catastrophe.
Okay, so the Hunger Hotspots Report acts as an early warning tool, effectively flagging emerging areas where acute hunger is on the rise and is expected to get worse. We do this by looking at a series of different indicators and looking at which ones are likely to worsen. So looking at kind of food consumption, looking at nutritional levels, looking at acute hunger levels and whether or not they're getting better or worse. And also taking into account, you know, contextual issues, conflict. So, for example, the flare up of conflict in Sudan, seeing how that's going to impact on hunger in Sudan itself and in the broader region. And also looking at, you know, economic drivers of hunger, as well as the climate crisis and climate extremes.
Sudan, okay, something is going on there. How about Nigeria? I was really surprised when Nigeria was actually in the mix here.
Yeah, I mean, Nigeria is a continent unto itself in a sense. It's such a large country, and economically it's a powerhouse. But at the same time, in the northeast of Nigeria, you have the ongoing insurgency and conflict linked to the Boko Haram crisis in the Lake Chad Basin, which is driving, you know, it's driving acute hunger. What we see is a conflict is a major driver of hunger in lots of countries, including Nigeria. And we see fighting essentially upending people's lives, you know, forcing families to flee, farmers abandoning their fields, the whole food supply chain collapses. And this impacts on the most vulnerable people in these countries, including Nigeria.
So what actions are now being taken by UN agencies like yours, the World Food Programme, to actually tackle this problem?
I mean, in a sense, it's a twin-track approach. I think that, you know, the immediate need is to scale up humanitarian action and provide food to these vulnerable people who are struggling to meet their needs. So in a lot of these, most of these hotspots, we're scaling up massively to provide food in these emergency situations. So, for example, in the Sudan, just over the weekend, we started distributions in Khartoum after a small pause, given all the conflict and everything. So it's about scaling up humanitarian action in the immediate, meeting food needs today, but also looking at the longer term needs and the longer term solutions to these food crises. So we don't just repeatedly respond every year to these food crises. So it's about working with communities. It's about building the resilience of people to these shocks. You know, we know that the climate crisis is a reality and it impacts communities across the world. How can we work with those communities to ensure that they're better prepared when the next flood comes, when there's the next drought? And same with the economic shocks, you know, identifying clearly what the drivers are, what are the economic stresses that affect the most vulnerable communities in some of these hotspot areas, and how can we work with them so that they're better prepared for when the next shock comes.
Long-term solutions, yes, to address the root causes. James, and then there is the El Nino climate phenomenon. Forecast for mid-2023, it could provoke climate extremes in vulnerable countries. So how do agencies like yours go about helping people adapt to a climate change and ultimately prevent famine?
As I said, the climate crisis is real. It's here, and the impacts are being felt all across the world. El Nino is a really concerning development. And effectively, it shows, you know, the shift in climate patterns is having significant implications for various hotspots across the world. We're looking at below average rain in the dry corridor of Central America, you know, areas of the Sahel and the Horn of Africa being affected. And if you look at the case of Somalia, for example, you know that in Somalia they're facing a pendulum of climate extremes. They've had five consecutive failed rains, and now this year they're dealing with catastrophic floods. So you know it's about working with the communities on the ground to ensure that they're better able to adapt to the new climate reality.
That was World Food Programme spokesperson James Belgrave. He talked to me from Harare, Zimbabwe. You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. News media in Uganda say the bodies of dozens of Uganda's People's Defense Forces soldiers killed by Al-Shabaab a week ago in Somalia will be flown home this week. The militants attacked and overran a UPDF forward operating base in Bulomarir on May 26th. Reuters News says President Yoweri Museveni on Saturday said Uganda lost up to 54 soldiers. The African Union says Al-Shabaab launched the attack using bombs loaded into vehicles and suicide bombers. Four Ugandan soldiers who escaped the attack have been found after hiding in the bush for several days. Our colleague Harun Maruf in the VOA Somali service spoke with UPDF Brigadier General Felix Kulagie about the soldiers.
It is true. And they confirmed the number that was so far recovered in the base. Three other ranks and one lieutenant survived, hiding within and surroundings of the base.
And how many days did they spend hiding?
6 days.
Did they tell you how? How did they hide? And if they engaged Al-Shabaab during the hiding?
Well, I've not spoken to them after when they recovered, they were weak because they were only surviving on urine. So they didn't reveal much. We intended to indeed discuss with them after recovery.
So were the four soldiers, were they together or were they hiding in separate locations?
No, they were in separate locations.
Two and two or one and three?
I said separate. Each one of them was hiding alone.
And what was their condition when they were found?
Of course, they were weak, out of hunger. The lieutenant had been wounded. His leg was in a bad shape, and they are being treated in hospital. But they are promising to recover very well.
And did they say whether they saw Al-Shabaab looking for them? What did they saw?
Of course, they saw. They saw Al-Shabaab looking for them. But fortunately, they survived.
Which day exactly they were found? Was it on Thursday when the troops returned to the base?
Correct.
And where are these soldiers now?
They are in our field hospital. The lieutenant is, I think, in a bigger hospital in Nairobi because of his badly damaged leg.
And when is Uganda going to evacuate the bodies of the soldiers?
Well, that's internal.
And final question, how did this news of the death toll, high death toll among Ugandan soldiers affected the Ugandans, the citizens? What do they feel about their troops in Somalia?
Mixed reactions. Some urge us to go on and make sure we revenge. Others feel it is a mission we should do, get out, because we are dying for other people, not for our country. And for us, we are saying we have to keep in so that the entire Africa is peaceful, rather than mere wishing for peace and we don't work for it.
So Uganda will stay on course in Somalia?
Absolutely, until we are asked to leave by the deploying authority, who is the African Union.
The President Yoweri Museveni, spoke about corruption and some commanders recruiting, as he put it, cooks, their bodyguards, personal assistants. Is this true?
The president in his position has intelligence and definitely have no comment about what he said.
That was my colleague Harun Maru from VOA Somali Service. The Ugandan People's Defense Force was in Mogadishu in March 2007 to help improve security in Somalia. Today is World Environment Day. To mark the day, we go to South Sudan, where a senior official and some activists in South Sudan say they are concerned about the clearing of forests on the outskirts of the capital, Juba. For VOA News, Juliana Siapai reports from Juba.
According to the United Nations Environment Programme, or UNEP, South Sudan is endowed with diverse natural forests and woodlands. UNEP says forests cover an estimated area of 191,667 square kilometers, which is about 30% of the country's land mass. But officials with the country ministries of environment and forestry say there is widespread cutting of trees across South Sudan by soldiers, traders, and some individuals from the neighboring. Joseph Africano Bartel is the undersecretary in the Ministry of Environment and Forestry. He says South Sudan is experiencing deforestation due to instability. Bartel says the Ministry of Environment and Forestry plan to embark on reviving teak plantations to stop deforestation in some parts of the country.
We have several forest reserves and we have some teak plantations. But because of the war, all those places have been devastated and all the government reserves, we cannot have access to them. Rebels and people are cutting those trees. But now, as a plan, in order to regenerate those areas, we are planning to plant 100 million trees in 10 years. We are also trying to make sure that we have an alternative source of energy such that we don't depend on trees and charcoal as the source of energy.
UNEP says deforestation is caused by the need for fuel, charcoal, agriculture, livestock, and construction. Melancol is the crowned South Sudan Miss Earth 2022. She says deforestation remains a major problem in South Sudan, adding that every South Sudanese should safeguard the environment for future generations by planting trees.
Since we have not yet fully advanced as a nation, it is causing us more harm than good, meaning we're exposing our country more and more to global warming. However, we can still save South Sudan and our planet in so many easy ways. One of the easiest is reforestation.
Binza Joel is a South Sudanese who is passionate about agribusiness. He says trees planting in both urban and rural areas can reduce the effect of climate change.
Many people's energy needs within the city is satisfied by the use of tree products, that is charcoal, as well as using trees for fencing for security reasons. I want to emphasize that on this day, as much as we want to cut trees to satisfy our human needs, let's plant trees. Let's plant at least, as you cut one tree, plant five trees to replace for sustainability and for the next generation. Having a good tree around your house is having a clean air to breathe.
South Sudanese environmental activist says management of the forest around the capital could help residents of Juba town who are struggling with high temperatures throughout the year. Salwa Suzi is a resident of Juba. She says having trees around populated city like Juba comes with the health benefit.
We need to be planting more trees to be able to change the climate in this country. Another effect of deforestation is climate changes. We have seen less rain this year due to the less numbers of trees in this country, especially in Juba town. Because when you compare Juba town to a lot of other cities, Juba is hotter than a lot of the towns I have been to.
Some environmental activists in South Sudan are calling for the introduction and implementation of effective forest-related programs, policies and legislation to protect forests in the country. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shapai in Juba.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.